Morning, everyone, and welcome to ECL's third quarter 2014 results conference call. If you need a copy of the press release issued this morning, it is available on the company's website at www.e-cl.cl. Before we begin, I would like to remind you that this call is being recorded and that the information discussed today may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's financial and operating performance. All projections are subject to risks and uncertainties, and actual results may differ materially. Please refer to the detailed note in the company's press release regarding forward-looking statements. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Carlos Freitas. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, and good morning, everybody. This is Carlos Freitas. I'm the CFO of ECL, and we are pleased to inform you the results for the first three trimesters of this year. I hope you have in front of you the presentation that we just uploaded to our website this morning. So I propose that we go and start to the slide number 3 of the new presentation. So in a nutshell, we have had a very solid quarter between July and September, basically a quarter that we had in the last 2 years. Our EBITDA reached $244 million in the first 9 months of this year, which is a 29% improvement over the same period of last year. And this is basically due to the best operating performance as a whole of our plants throughout this year, as well as higher margins, stronger take-or-pay provisions that we have during this year, and higher gas sales as well. So these several issues contributed to a strong performance, not only during this third quarter, but throughout this year. If you see the net income of the company during these first 9 months, the number is $85 million, which is a strong improvement, a 277% improvement compared to the first 9 months of last year. The most important reason for this is, of course, the better EBITDA of the company, but also the lower depreciation that we had throughout this year, and the better FX results as well. Finally, net debt of the company decreased by 16%, not only because the gross debt itself reduced, but also because we have more cash in hand as well. And this is despite the capex that we have had to incur during the last years for some capex that we have to make for environmental reasons, and the extension of the useful life of our plants, and as well despite the huge 100% payout that we paid in the last years. If you now move to the next slide on page 4, you see some other highlights, non-financials. So first thing is that, as you know, we had we issued last week our second bond. The bond for $350 million was issued on Friday of last week for a duration of 8 years and an average life of 10 years. So the bullet repayment in January 2025. The coupon is 4.5% and the yield, final yield was 4.568%. So more or less 5.57%. And the proceeds of this new bond is fully to prepay our existing project finance for the City A plant. This project finance was put in place in 2007 in a time in which City A was still a company belonging to GDF Swiss. So there was a project finance at the time. At the current conditions, the project finance seemed expensive. So we issued a new bond last week. And the full amount was to prepay the project finance, which, by the way, was prepaid this morning. So now we have a lower cost, a higher duration, and basically all our debts are now fixed rate. The second important highlight here on the same page is, as you probably know, here in Chile, there was a major tax reform approved in September of this year, which, among several issues, increased the income tax rate from 20 to up to 27% over time. And this should have had an impact into our income statement of $44 million. That is because of the increase in the deferred tax liability of the company, which was a net number of $44 million. And that's why we issued an hecho esencial, a material fact, was issued a month ago, announcing to the market that we would have this increase in deferred taxes, with a P&L impact of $44 million. Nevertheless, last week, October 17, 2 weeks ago, the Chilean regulator, the SFS, issued a new rule saying that this in Chile, this would not have a P&L effect. So there was an increase in deferred taxes, but this increase in deferred taxes was reflected directly into the net worth of the companies, so in the equity, so without going through P&L. So this is now the rule here for this issue here in Chile, which is not aligned to IFRS, but that was the statement issued by the local regulator here in Chile. The third important highlight on the same page, that we announced dividends for $7 million that were paid in September of this year. As a reminder, since the beginning of this year, we are distributing dividends 3 times per year. So usually the first one in September, the second one should be in January, and the final one is usually in April of each year. Fourth important remark here. In July of this year, so in third quarter, we started the construction of the Pampa Camarones solar plant for 60 megawatts. And this is the first stage of this project. We have up to 300 megawatts of solar plant to be built over time, for which we already have the environmental permits. And we do intend to proceed with this power plant once we have more PPAs to back it up. And finally, the final comment here for the same page, as already announced, Mr. Lode Verdane, which was our CEO in the last 10 years, he took new responsibilities within the same GDF Suez Group here in Chile. He is now the head of business development, new business here in the Latam region. And there's a new CEO, which started in September, Mr. Axel Levesque, who was also in the region, was also working here in Chile and Peru in the past years. So he's also very knowledgeable about ECL. Going forward, on page 6, just a quick snapshot on the market here in the SIC and in the SING. In the SING, we operate in a market in which 88% of demand is from mining companies and only 12% from distribution companies, which, by the way, is our client. That's called ML. A market that keeps on growing. The forecast for growth for the next 10 years is 5.5%. And a market that is basically coal. So coal-based generation provides the base load in the SING. And we are by far the biggest player in this market. In the SIC is a bigger market, 3 times the size of the SING. A much more regulated market with demand coming from distribution companies, much more than mining companies. And we, so far, we don't operate in the SIC, but we intend to do so in the future. On page 7, keeping with the snapshot on the SIC, it is a market that has virtually no exposure to hydro risk because almost 100% of the installed capacity is based on thermal-based generation, so coal, natural gas, and diesel. A market that is, because it is, the PPAs are done with mining companies. Those PPAs are much more flexible than PPAs with distribution companies. So we are able to negotiate with these clients terms and conditions and prices that are much more suitable to the needs of the clients. And this is a market that, as you can see in the chart, has suffered in the past because of a lack of gas when the supply from Argentina was cut. But then in the last years, the market is much more stable, and there's LNG being sourced from several parts of the world. So today, the thing is in a much more, I'd say, balanced position than in the past, and then today in the stick. And here on page 8, this is a new chart that we just produced, just to illustrate that regardless of the variations in the copper price worldwide, which is a commodity, the output of copper in the sink does not change much. You see here on the yellow bars, the copper production out of the sink, which is more or less stable in the last 8 years. You see here the bars are much more stable. And the variation in the copper price was important. You see that the copper price reached $4 per pound and then reduced to 2 and then back to 4 again. But this does not change much the output and production of copper out of the sink. Why? Because in the sink, or in Chile as a whole, but in the sink mainly, the copper mines, they provide the base load output production of copper worldwide. The Chile mines are usually much cheaper than their peers worldwide. So even with this variation in the copper price, the base load copper production is still coming out of Chile. And to keep the same production, the mining companies have more and more increased their demand for power. You see here the red line, which is the monthly gross demand in the sink itself, which has increased over time, basically for two reasons, because there is more and more demand of power because of the reduction in the grades of the ores there in the sink. So the same output of copper requires more energy. And second, because more and more water is being required to be pumped from sea level up to the mine, to the hills, which is requiring more and more energy from this to take this salt water uphill for 200 kilometers up to the mines. So this is a trend as well. So more and more power is being needed to maintain the same output of copper in the sink. On page 9, you see here the expansion, I mean the new mines itself. Those are some numbers, some products that we have that we know. I mean, in the market, based on Consejo Minero, Cochilco, etc. Those are products that all of them do not have their power supply already contracted. So those are plants, those are mining plants that have been there for some time, but sooner or later they may materialize, because as I said, at the end, Chile is still a very good place to produce copper. Now, moving to ECL on page 10, the ownership structure of the company has not changed. Still, the controlling shareholder is GDF Suisse, 53%, and still pension funds with 21%, more or less. This didn't change, and GDF Suisse is, as you probably know, the biggest utility in the world. So we are part of the biggest group of utilities in the world. Here it's worth noting that as well, we have 100% of our plants. The only exception is CTH, which we have 60%. This didn't change. On page 11, just to illustrate a bit more about the sink, as I said, we are by far the biggest player in the region, in the sink, and we are the only one with a balanced portfolio of assets. We have a base load in coal, but also have a generating and available capacity in gas, and we have this backup facilities in diesel and fuel oil. And for growth, you see here on the right part of the same slide, the 2011, the year in which we started operating CTA and CTH, the two latest coal plants that we built. And finally, on page 12, just to illustrate that on top of our generation plants, we are a very important transmission player in the country. We have more than 2,300 kilometers of high tension lines. And our plants, our assets are spread throughout the thing. On page 13, there's a lot of information here on the same page. This is just to illustrate how balanced is our portfolio of PPAs. On the top part of the same table, on A, you see contractable efficient capacity. This is what we can sell. is the net amount of megawatts, I mean energy translated into megawatts, that we can sell through long-term PPAs. So it's basically our efficient capacity in coal plus what we have today contracted in gas, because today is what we have LNG boats already contracted. So for this year, you see here 256. This is equivalent to 6 boats of LNG. And going forward, we have so far 5 boats of LNG. And this is enough for our PPAs. Our PPAs today on letter B is more or less 1,200 megawatts equivalent in energy. PPA, which prices have increased over time, you see here that our average price is $119 per megawatt hour in the first 9 months of this year, which is an increase compared to last year. And the most important reason for this increase was the increase in the tariff with ML, which is indexed to Henry Hub. And Henry Hub compared to last year is much more expensive this year. So the tariff of ML also increased this year. Going forward, Henry Hub has gone down a bit, so we should expect a slight reduction in the tariff of ML going forward. So worth noting as well that on letter C, you see here that we have a lot of PPAs in which we have pass-through provisions to clients regarding the marginal cost and maintenance risks. So basically, this is to illustrate that although we seem to be in a net buying position from the spot market, some of these risks are passed through to the clients. So at the end, we don't want to be either very long or very short into the spot. So on the percentage that we have currently contracted is today 93%, next year 97%. So our intention is to work based on these numbers, I mean, to have almost 100% of our efficient capacity contracted through long-term contracts. And contracts that have an average remaining life, as of today, of almost 9 years, and contracts with solid counterparties, our clients are Codelco, is BHP, is Glencore, Xstrata, the Luxich Group here in Chile, so, ML. So all strong clients with strong ratings. Going forward on page 14, this is the average indexation, the weighted average indexation of our portfolio of PPAs. So today, more or less 6% of our PPAs is indexed to coal, 20% to gas, and 20% to others, mainly inflation. And this tends to reflect our costs. So our costs, the most important cost that we have is fuel, of which coal is the most important fuel cost. So this more or less tends to reflect, I mean, the sales tend to be matched to our costs. Because at the end, the approach, the idea of the company is to have stable margins. So if the coal price increased, our tariffs prices increase as well, so as our costs. So that at the end, we have a match between cost and revenues. And what I mentioned regarding ML is reflected on page 15. Page 15, you see here that the ML tariff is adjusted in May and November of each year. Is translated to pesos every 6 months, and then we have our only PPA set in pesos within these 6 months. So to cover out this remaining FX risk, what we do is that we have we sign forward sometimes just to hedge it out. The tariff for ML, as I said, is expected to go down a bit going forward, because in the chart you can see that in the last quarter, the all-in tariff of ML was around $130 per megawatt hour, which is the green line. But on the other hand, you see that the Henry Hub price, which is the orange line, was much higher in the beginning of this year, and then went down to 4.5 in the second quarter of this year, and now has gone down to more or less $3.8 per million BTU. This has not yet translated into the tariff of email. The tariff of email is still considering the handheld prices around 4.5. So there's a gap here, a negative gap, I would say, through which the next tariff of email should be lower than the current tariffs, because of this time lag issue with email. So going forward, I mean, in the long term, we are matched, but there is this temporary quarter-on-quarter issues for email. Finally, on page 16, you see here our energy supply curve. So on average, our fuel and electricity purchase cost is $66 per megawatt hour, while our average sale price is $119. So a more than $50 per megawatt hour of gross margin. And this, if you see the numbers in the last quarters, this tend to be more or less the same. So as I said, our approach is to protect the margins. Finally, on page 17, there's a snapshot on the sobrecostos, which are the overcosts in the sink. Those sobrecostos, they are paid by by every generation company in the sink pro rata to its portfolio of PPAs. So because we have we are the biggest player in the sink, we incur in most of these sobrecostos. But most of these sobrecostos that we incur, at the end, they are passed through to clients. So you see here that, for example, on the last column of the table in the top right part of the slide, you see here the ECL pro rata this year compared to last year increased by 5.7 in the first quarter, decreased by 6.5 in the second quarter, and then increased again 6.1 in this latest quarter. So overall, throughout this year, more or less $60 million of increase in our take in the sobrecostos, but most of which is at the end is a pass-through. So we tend to be covered here as well. So this is the current business. Now, if we move forward to the slide number 19, just talk about the perks. So the first slide here is the IEM plants. Those are two plants that we have had in our portfolio, in our pipeline, for some years now. Those are plants that are independent from each other, so we don't need to build them together. We can build first IEM-1 and then IEM-2 later on. Those are plants for which we have the site. It is a brownfield. It is there in the site of Mejillones, where we already operate, where we have been there for years, and where we have four plants in operation. And there is a energy hub for the sink nowadays. And what we don't have for this power plant are long-term PPAs to trigger this construction. And we do like to, as I said, to operate based on long-term PPAs. So once we sign long-term PPAs that will justify this new construction, we will launch IEM-1. So far, we haven't signed this PPA as of today. On page 20 and 21, you see here the fixing line. This is a line that was developed in the past within GDF Suez, but GDF Suez has stated already that ECL is the investment vehicle for the power sector in Chile. So just to be coherent with this, we acquired this project from GDF Suez in January of this year, and this line is being developed. Today it is in the detailed engineering phase, so we are detailing exactly the construction of the line to be started soon. And this line, as of today, it is still a private line, so a line that in the end, in the future, will connect power plants in the north of the country to the clients in the SIC. But we do believe that this line has all the technical capacity of being declared trunk. So that's what we believe. We have been developing this line for years, and we are confident that this line will be part of the trunk system sooner or later. This aligned that we today we are searching for a partner because we don't want to at the end we do want to have a 56% joint control stake with a partner. We don't want to consolidate this line. We want at the end to save our balance sheet for our generation business. So today there is already an investment bank with a mandate in the market looking for looking to help us in finding a suitable partner to help push it through and then at the end to have the joint control going forward. On page 22, some comments on Monte Redondo. Monte Redondo is the remaining asset of GDF Suez in Chile out of ECL in the power sector. And this company was developed in the SIC. Those are two plants in the SIC, one in operation, a wind farm for 48 megawatts and a small hydro for 34 megawatts. And these power plants have been developed by GDF Suez in the past because in the past ECL was focused only in the SIC, also because Codelco was there, and the mission of ECL was to invest in the SIC. Today, the idea is that ECL is the investment vehicle for Suez in the SIC in the country, but the Laja plant is still being built. So once Laja is finished and fully tested and fully commissioned, and then we may launch a transaction among related parties to buy this asset, to buy this plant, to this plant, this company. So once this is launched, and then there will be an independent committee led by independent board members of ECL, and this committee will be the body to discuss and to negotiate with the seller, meaning GDF Suez, the potential price and the conditions for payments for this asset. This has not been launched. This will not be launched this year either. So at the end, this may be launched next year. And finally, on page 23, some comments on our solar plants. Solar has a lot of potential there in the north of the country, and we have started our footprint in solar as well. We have a 2 megawatt pilot project there in operation since July of last year. We are currently building a 6 megawatt plant, Pampa Camarones, the one that I mentioned, and we have also a 34 megawatt plant under development, for which we are as well trying to close long-term PPAs. On page 24, the environmental capex that I mentioned to comply with the regulations in Chile, we have invested a lot in the past. $150 million have been incurred so far, and it is virtually done. You can see on page 26 that the generation for environmental project, the remaining capex is more or less $12 million only. In this quarter and the next year. So those are the numbers for our CapEx going forward. But as you can see here, they do not include IEM and they do not include the line itself. Only the condition for the product from GDF Suez in January of this year. So those are some comments for our future growth. Now, if we move to page 28, you can see here some numbers of the company. So, a slight reduction in sales and in generation, basically because we have been, I would say, more proactive in managing our portfolio of PPAs. So, some PPAs we have not renewed on purpose, just to be more balanced, to have better balance between our net generation capacity in our sales. And on the bottom right part of the same slide, you see here this upward trend that I mentioned on prices, mainly the regulated PPA with ML, which has increased a lot because of the increase in Henry Hub, which represents 60% of indexation of ML. On page 29, some more numbers of the company. The operating revenues increased by 6% due to a combination of issues. The most important one are the higher prices because of higher Henry Hub, for example. The higher spot sales as well, and the take-or-pay capacity payments made from some clients. As well, we had this year the settlement with the EPC contractor in charge of the construction of CTA and CTH. We finally settled with them some pending issues, and they paid us $9 million, of which there was an impact of $6 million in both sales and EBITDA this year. And EBITDA as well increased due to higher income from gas sales. And on the negative side, last year there was an insurance compensation for $13 million that we didn't have this year. So all in all, the EBITDA increased by 29% year on year, and sales increased by 6%. And this is explained in a graphical manner on page 30. You see here the EBITDA comparison between the 9 months of this year and the 9 months of last year. The most important reason for this increase from $190 million to $244 million this year is the improvement in margins. So margins, because of the better margin in the metal, for example. Although, as I said, going forward, there is a slight downward trend in the tariff of ML. So this quarter, it was very positive for us because we were, I would say, buying cheaper gas because Henry Hub is now less expensive than in the beginning of this year. But the tariff of ML was still reflecting a higher Henry Hub. So this additional margin is here as well. The other important thing here is gas sales that we do on an opportunistic basis. I mean, every time that we believe that it's better to sell gas than to burn gas, we can do so. We have done so in the past, and we keep on doing this this year. And the other, I would say, the one-offs for this year are three bars here on the same page. The settlement for EPC, which is $6 million, as I said before. The lower repair costs for $5 million. We had, as you remember, a failure in CTH in January of last year that we had to repair. So this was a one-off of last year. And the other one-off of last year is the insurance compensation that we accounted for $13 million of the last year. Moving to page 31, net income comparison. A important improvement from $23 million to $85 million, which is the ECL part, I mean, without including the minority shareholders that we have in CTH. Most of the improvement, of course, comes from the improvement in the BDA, but also the lower depreciation costs we have today. We have invested in the extension of useful life of some coal plants, and so this has translated into lower depreciation costs for $11 million more or less this year. FX, we had last year a FX cost, mainly in the second and third quarter of last year. This year, the FX is positive in $1 million. So in spite of the depreciation of the peso, I mean, because we are a dollarized company, we sell in dollars. Most of our costs are in dollars. Our debt is in dollars, so FX should not affect us much in function of the variation of the peso. And finally, on page 32, some other numbers of the company. You see here that our available cash position increased between $213 million end of last year to $275 as of September of this year, which means that our gross debt over BDA decreased to 2.5, and the net debt decreased to 1.6. So, and the EBITDA over interest expense increased to 6.6. So, very solid ratio, and very strong liquidity. And talking about debt on page 33, as of September, we still had the project finance. So we still had one bond that was issued 4 years ago. That's going to mature in January of 2021, which has a coupon of 5.6%, but the market cost, I mean, the yield to maturity, is around 4%. And we, as I said, prepaid the project finance of CTA. The project finance used to have a current cost of more or less 5.4% as of the second quarter, for example. Going forward, it was supposed to increase because, as you can see here on the chart, there are 25 bps step ups in the spread every 3 years. So the CTA project finance was going to be more expensive over time as well. So those are the reasons why we prepaid this project finance and issued this new bond. Now we have a longer duration. So a single maturity in 10 years, and a lower cost. So the new bond was issued with a 4.6% more or less yield. So more than 1%, so around 1% reduction compared to the current cost of CTA, which was supposed to increase. So the pro rata, I mean today, and by the way, we already prepaid this morning the CTA project finance. So as of now, we have only two debts, one bond maturing in 2021 for $400 million, and a new bond maturing in 10 years from now, so January of 2025, in fact, for $350 million. So basically, two bonds with a fixed rate, dollarized debt, and a very stable interest rate payment profile. On page 34, an illustration in a graphical way of how our net debt evolved over time. Net debt decreased from $548 million as of December of last year to $490 more or less as of September of this year. So it was 15% reduction in a function of our strong cash flow from operations. So despite the capex that we had, the dividends that we paid, etc., in a nutshell, our cash flow from operations was very strong, which allowed us to reduce our net debt because of this increase, important increase in the cash position of the company. And talking about dividends, on page 35, you see here that we have a very flexible dividend policy, and I would say very straightforward, which is to pay more dividends once we have less capex and more cash in hand, and to pay less dividends once we have more capex. So we have done so in the past. We'll keep on doing so in the future. So we have paid so far in the last years 100% because the capex was not that huge. 2 years before, we paid 50% because we were still finishing the construction of CTA and CTH, which commissioned in June and July of 2011. And 5 years ago, we paid 30% because we were in the middle of the construction of CTA and CTH. So it's as simple as that. And as I said, we have already announced and paid $7 million in provisional dividends in September of this year because we are now paying three times per year. So to finish, page 36, the ratings of the company, which have improved in the past, in the recent past, we have had two upgrades, one from S&P and one from Fitch in the last month. Both are now BBB set, and this also reflected in the success that we had in our bond issue last week. So that's ECL. Page 37, just to close, I mean, some things that we have done in the recent past to improve our performance. A clear orientation from a strategic perspective with the acquisition of the line, the buyout of this company from GDF Swiss. working with long-term contracts with reliable clients only. We don't want to be, as I said, either very short or very long into the spot market. Developing, when possible, more solar plants. And we sold Distrinor, which was a minor business that we had, as we already announced. We sold in December of last year that minor gas business to DDL Swiss, because it was not, at the end, our core business. We have the commercial and we have improved the commercial and operations of the company. The portfolio, with this proactive management of portfolios, trying to improve margins, and the non-renewal of low-margin PPAs, and renewing with other clients with better margins, and with the opportunistic gas sales to clients in the SIC or in the SING. With more gas supplied this year, and with better performance of our coal plants as well throughout this year. And finally, on the right part of the same chart, some initiatives that we took to reduce costs and to streamline the business. We have scaled down our business in Argentina. This is our only asset we have out of Chile. We are a Chilean company, but we do have this small asset in Argentina that has not been operating, called Norandina Argentina, which is a gas pipe that used to bring gas from Argentina. We have renegotiated several contracts there, aiming at having a reduction of more or less $1 million per month as from May of this year in lower costs. We are also launching some initiatives to reduce costs as a whole as part of the GDF Swiss Perform 15 program. And as I said, we have extended the useful life of some plants with positive earnings per share impact and with a more proactive approach towards FX risks. So, for example, as I said, the PPA with ML is the only one, the only relevant one that we collect in pesos, and we have a 6 month remaining FX risk. So to hedge it out, we sometimes, and we usually, by the way, we buy forwards. So that's ECL. I thank you very much. And now I think we can open for questions.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone at this time or any time. If at any point your question is answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Questions will be taken in the order they are received. We do ask that when you poll your question, that you please pick up on your handset to provide optimum sound quality. Please hold while we poll for questions. Our first question comes from Ezequiel Hernandez of Scotiabank.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my question and congratulations on the strong results, Carlos. I wanted to ask two questions. I hope you don't mind if we go one by one. The first one is related to slide 13, the contracted level. Specifically, the line B, we've seen, if I'm not mistaken, an increase in the guidance for the consumption of clients. I wanted to know if this, like 5% for the first 2 years, 10% for more long term. I don't know if this is related to any new contracts that you have signed during the quarter, or if it's just stronger demand from the existing contracts.
Thank you, Zachary, for your questions. Indeed, on page 13, you see here that there was a increase in letter B, which is our expected demand from clients.
Uh-huh.
And this demand from clients, now we have now an 85% load factor, and in the past was 80%. So this is the most important reason we do expect going forward a slightly higher demand from our existing contracts with our existing clients. And also you see here on that the line that for the pass-through provisions to clients have also increased because of what I said. I mean, this proactive management of our portfolio. Now going forward, there are a bigger stake of pass-through provisions to clients of this maintenance and marginal cost risks. So at the end, this is part of our commercial approach, trying to proactively manage this, our portfolio, so that at the end, what we can sell is sold, basically.
Okay, got you. Thank you very much. The second question is related to slide 15, in which you detail the Hungry Hub and the ML energy price. If we take a look at the ML energy price and the ML monomic price, we've seen during 2014 a big jump in the spread between the energy price and the monomic price. I understand that this is probably related to the capacity payment and other things, but the spread is much bigger than in past years. I don't know if you can give us any sense of what is at play there, and if you would expect that spread to compress a little bit going forward.
Thank you. There are two things to comment here on page 15. Indeed, the tariff of ML increased a lot in the energy part. You see here in the chart that, for example, the Henry Hub, the yellow part, the yellow line, Henry Hub in ML tariff. Throughout 2013, for example, it was much lower, so the average should be around 3, more or less, or even less than this, or 3 or 3 point something. And today, this year, it's much higher. So this important increase in the Henry Hub prices, which accounts for 60% of the energy tariff of ML, explain this jump in the energy part. The capacity part is basically node price, which is more or less stable and flat, as you know. So today you have more or less $130 per megawatt hour monomic, which is more or less 115 in energy and more or less 15 equivalent in capacity. So what we expect is that this that there will be okay, we expect that there will be a reduction in the energy part of more or less I would say 5% in the next revision for ML.
Okay, thank you. If you have any other questions, I'll send an email for greater detail. Thank you very much. That's all my part.
Thank you.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Alexander Vacharsky of RNVL. Alexander, your line is open. Please make sure you're not on mute.
Oh, sorry. Hi, Carlo. Thank you for taking my question. I have a question regarding unregulated clients' tariffs. Last quarters, we have seen an improvement in this tariff, which in part was caused by take-or-pay clauses in some contracts. Can you give us some guidance on how much in dollars per megawatt hour this effect have increased tariffs last quarter? Thank you.
Hi, Alexander. In fact, we don't provide this type of guidance going forward. I mean, at the end, it will depend on how much the client's demand. What I can tell you is that each PPA is different, and there are more PPAs with more take or pay than others. At the end, our portfolio of PPAs provides us with a more or less stable margin. This quarter, it was a very strong quarter because at the end, the PPAs which have a higher take or pay are the ones that as well have had a reduction in the consumption. So at the end, we had this improvement in margins, which also allowed us to have more energy available to sell to the spot. So that's why this quarter was very strong because of this as well. So, but at the end, I mean, I cannot give you a guidance going forward.
Uh-huh. Okay, but do you expect a recovery in energy demand from these clients or for the next quarters?
Well, that's the same. I mean, there are a number of clients that have decreased their demand, and that have decreased throughout this year. So I mean, I cannot tell you how they're going to demand more or less. But at the end, I mean, again, we have a remaining lifetime of our PPAs of 9 years almost with strong take-or-pay provisions. So at the end, they can contract more or less or demand more or less for ECR as a whole is not that relevant. So that's why at the end we try to cover this risk once we discuss new PPAs with clients so that we can be more isolated from the rescue demand.
Okay, thank you very much.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And this will conclude the Q&A session for today. At this time, I would like to turn the floor back to ELC for any closing remarks.
Thank you. Thank you all for attending this conference call. We are available for more questions through our IR people here. And thank you for that. Bye.
Thank you. This thus concludes today's presentation. You may disconnect your lines at this time and have a nice day. 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 This time and have a nice day.